Well, hey, welcome, folks. This is our after conversation, our Q&A following up on the webinar with our panel, Michael Houle, Joel Seymour, Justin Barney, and myself, Justin Jutman. We've been talking for the past evening here about bivocational ministry. If you haven't seen the webinar or caught the blog post, go back. We'll have the link right below. Check that out. This year, we had too many questions. We just had so many questions coming in. We had some really good thoughts and some really kind of deep, specific questions that we wanted to make sure we had time to dive into. As Justin Barney says, this is the deep cuts. This is the B-side. This is some good follow-up content there. And so we want to just make some time. We're recording it for you in a quick video here. We're going to go to Joel Seymour first. Joel, we had a question that came in, which was really how much time and money allocation does it take for a self-sustaining and growing ministry? In the world of bivocational, you know, cost is a thing, right? And that is hard for folks to just make sure that works. What are some of those kind of key benchmarks that you talk about with church planters or churches as they're getting up and running with kind of time and money allocation?
Yeah, I think right off the bat, some of the stuff I'm talking to them about is what kind of a church do they want? Are we talking a classic church plant? Are we talking about a missional community? You know, those kind of things is going to play into it. And what's their time frame for wanting to get those things off? John Wimber was, you know, he's famous to say, you know, that, you know, every project, you know, is going to take time and resources, you know, and people. And whatever you have less of, that means it's going to take more of the other two things. So if you're going to try to cram this church plant, grow it real big, launch whatever in a short amount of time, you're going to need a lot more money and a lot more people up front. If you're going to take a longer view, it's just going to take less of those things. So I have known guys, Justin, that have went out with, you know, their church has sent them with 50 grand, you know. Most have went out with a, you know, $3,500 and a pizza and a 2 liter and go get them, you know. I mean, so in those cases, which is most of us who have went out planted, we're going to have to think through what's it going to take. I think it varies depending on the type of church. It varies on the town and the socioeconomic conditions of that town. We have a plant right now in Oil City, getting ready to go, Pennsylvania, and they just have gone in knowing they're going to be bivocational for a lot of time because it is a town that the industrial boom has went bust for many years, and there aren't a lot of jobs, and most of the people they're going to be ministering to are at least underemployed, if not unemployed, and so in their situation, they're in it for the long haul on bivocational ministry. I think it depends on, you know, what it costs to have a place to meet, what it costs, what are you going to put into it to do outreach. I think that's very important in the early stages of a church plant is outreach, 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 outreach. So put money towards that, put money towards discipleship. And then I'm always a fan just because of what it takes on a bivocational pastor and his family or her family is to plan to, is there going to be some kind of a stipend for them at some point, just even if they can't go full time, even if they're not half time, just to take some of the edge off. If it's a $300 a month, you know, housing allowance, something, mileage reimbursement, anything, just to help take some of the edge off. So for the gentleman that asked that question on our chat, that's not a specific because there's just too many variables, but I think that would help him begin to think through that process.
Yeah, that's really good. And Michael, I'm going to go to you as well, kind of on a question like this, which is kind of what's then the length of time to self-sustaining for a staff member? If you don't, you know, if you come in, unlike Joel's guy that he was just talking about saying, hey, we know we're going in for the long haul to be bivocational, or we kind of feel partially called to that. There is a tension that a lot of people feel that you've mentioned, this tension of going pro, right, or being full-time. And you've talked about what is success, but what are some of those variables in that relate to how long it's going to take?
Well, I think there's quite a few. One is size of community. It's definitely directly related to that. And also like socioeconomic type community. Oil City is a great example. It's a town that I know the guy is going to plant there, and he realizes that town economically is just not set up. And I think realizing in small towns, that's going to be a variable too. So A, you got to know the size of your town. B, the type of income that comes in your town, that really does matter, the economy. I think 3-2, the reality of the situation of like in small town America versus maybe urban, small town takes longer because they want to take longer to get to know you. So becoming aware of the reality that like in our community, I said before in the webinar, it takes 7 years in our town for us to be a part of that town, that you're no longer an outsider. So all those variables add together. And I think understanding that, really understanding your community in that way matters, you know, really understanding that's a variable. So the answer to the question, there isn't really a set time. It's not the magical year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, 5, 7, 10. It's going to matter those variables. And to truly understand those variables, I mean, for us, the understanding was 7 years it's going to take for us to be known, to be accepted, not even known, just accepted in the town. Another 3 years to be known in our community. And we did a ton of outreach. We did a ton of things in the community. We were active almost weekly for a while and just always something to do. But to understand those variables makes a difference. And when you can relate to that, then you can kind of judge how long it's going to take you a little bit.
There's a variable too of even your family size. I know you two, you know, you already had kids when you planted, you know. When my first plant, I didn't have kids yet. And then on a second plant, I moved here planning on having kids within a year or two. And so those were two different things, not having kids and having kids. And you all, you know, had older kids. So even your family size and needs are going to dictate some of what you're talking about, Michael.
Correct. I think, you know, I mean, we had two kids. Our kids were going to enter third grade and kindergarten. And that made a difference. You know, kids are more expensive the older they get. They, for those who have kids or going to have kids, the cost never goes down. It just keeps going up. And the older, it seems proportional to their age, right? So we learned that. And that made a difference. I mean, what type of income you truly need to survive for your kids to get what they need, that does add into a factor. If you're, you know, you're a single person or just newly married with no kids, that changes things. But when you have kids and family, you have to take that into account as well. That meant a little longer for us along the way.
And to add in here, just there's a, you know, through Multiply Vineyard, our discernment process, our four conversations to kind of work a church planter towards a healthy launch, coming from a healthy vineyard church. Those are conversations that if you're working that process well with your pastor that you're being sent from, you should be having those conversations. They're totally built in, right? The conversation of, does your family have debt? What's your expenses? Is there going to be emergency funds? All those kinds of things should be conversations you have going through the process. And so, you know, to kind of point back to more resources, Multiply Vineyard is going to be a key kind of connection point to say, hey, as I'm preparing to launch, what are those conversations I need to be having? They're really built into the steps. I'll put a link below so that you guys can check that out. Joel, were you going to add to that?
I was going to say the reality is most of us, unless we own a small business or are a CEO, most of us have no business background. We've never had an employee. We don't understand that it's going to take a lot of money to sustain a family because we're just used to thinking often, oh, this is what I get paid. But we don't see what a company has to pay on top of that. Social Security benefits, all those kind of things. And so I think those kind of conversations are very, very important to have. So I'm glad we have that in our process.
Yeah. So let's switch to a new question here. We had a great question income that was talking about how important is it to work within the town that you're planting? Now, we have very different experiences here. Justin Barney, you did not work in the town that you were planting in, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, I realized when we were planting that I'd be starting out bivocational. And I actually, when I first moved to this area, I lost a job that I was kind of, basically two of us were hired. They unbeknownst to us, they pitted us against each other and they were looking for one person that was going to stay. And unfortunately they chose the other person and I was cut. And then all of a sudden I found myself without a job and my wife had quit her job because I had gotten this good full-time job. So we were in a really, really bit of a bind there for a little while, but again, God will sustain you. So I started realizing, okay, I'm going to have to go down this other road. And I started studying for my insurance licensing exam so that I could go and do insurance. I come from a family of insurance people. So seemed like a good fit for being bivocational. I knew it was not going to be the long haul, but this is something I could do. So anyway, I interviewed for two jobs. One was actually this, and this is the kicker. One job was actually in Keene, the town I lived in, and the town we felt called to plant in. And the other job was in this town about 25 minutes away over state lines in Vermont called Brattleboro. And we prayed about the two situations. One was very corporate, climb the corporate ladder, kind of take work home. That whole situation was kind of be a rat race for us. The other one was a little bit more laid back, a little bit more mom and pop, kind of like family business. And I realized I'd be going home every night to my kids, able to go to our small group, able to be freed up and not to really, you know, I could really disconnect. So for us, we felt all kinds of peace about going to Brattleboro with me. And then I realized, man, again, right back to that bivocational stuff, I need to leverage my team. 90% of them live in Keene. They work in that area. Why don't I strategically leverage their influence in the town until I'm able to come back, until I'm able to actually spend my working hours and days in the city that I live in? So, you know, I knew that it wasn't long-term. So for me, it was hopeful. It did provide some challenges for sure. You can't just go readily meet with somebody that's in Keene because you're 25 minutes away. But it did give me a lot of time to kind of zero in on leadership. It also allowed me to get to know people in the town of Brattleboro. Now we have a vision. God has expanded our vision. We even went through a name change because God was blowing up our vision for the surrounding towns, including going across state lines into Brattleboro. So we have a handful of people that come over from Brattleboro now to either go to our large group gathering on Sundays or to exchange groups, which are our small group kind of life here during the week. Now I've got the connection to them because of Brattleboro. And we see our church moving in that way in an autonomous church plant or a multi-site in the next 2 years. So it leveraged the long-term vision for us. And that's kind of just our story with it.
That's so cool to hear how God was doing that, especially with that piece that you had about actually working elsewhere when so many folks really feel, hey, we need to work kind of in that local spot. Joel, how was that for you as you were first planning? What was there any dynamics of sort of being or working in the town that took shape with your church?
Yeah, the Lancaster Vineyard, when we planted it, I think Christy and I were the only ones, well, I know for sure we were the only ones who lived and worked in the town roughly the first year. I think our small group was 25, 26 people until we actually had somebody who did both. So that lived and worked there. Our particular town, if you want a good paying job and you're not in school or you're not in the hospitals, then you're probably driving 30 to 45 minutes away to Columbus. And so that was just the reality we lived in. What that did early on is it put a lot of pressure on us to gather from our workplaces and even outside of our workplaces. It put a little more pressure on me to get to know more people, get more involved in the community, just because a lot of our team, you know, wasn't from here. So that was our reality of had we not been in working and living in the town, I'm not sure we would have got off the ground because, again, we were it in that core group early on. The good news is the few that did live in Lancaster and who were driving to Columbus, they were very involved with their neighbors, and so they were gathering that way.
So. That's great. Michael, you mentioned that it took 7 years to gain any kind of trust in the small town that you were in, right? And so how did that work for you guys about needing to live and work in the town that you were in?
For us, it was a must. And the reality is, for us, we had to live here. We had to not just live here, but work here and be part of the fabric of the community in every way, shape, and form. We're a small community. We're not very big, but reality was for us to build that trust to show that we were truly a part of this community, we had to. And so that was the key element for ourselves. I think the big thing for us and the variable that we took out of this was understanding where we were and where we lived. And I think for each one of our stories, that's kind of the key, is we understood where we lived. And I think exegeting your community, exegeting the culture you live in matters. And I think that's the number one thing. So for us, in our community, we had to. We have a town about 20-some miles south of us that's at Eau Claire, Wisconsin. That's about 60,000 strong. And I could easily got a better job there. My wife could easily get a better job there. And but we would never have had a church off the ground here in Chippewa. It really made a difference in every way, shape, and form for us. So I think no matter what way you do it, I think you can do it any way. I think you heard all three stories and all three related differently. But I think the key is, if you noticed, all three of us lived in the same town that we planted in, even though we may not have worked in that town. And I think that's the key element, that we knew our neighbors, that we interacted with them. All those things matter. I think the thing that you hear over and over in the vineyard is the word relationship, right? Relationship with God, love others, relationship with people. And I think for all three of the stories, that is the key element, is the relational element. And I think you just have to understand your town to know what's going to work for you in terms of a job.
That's really good. Thanks, guys. And I love that, exegeting a culture of your town, right? And really knowing your town well and living in it well and having a presence there is going to matter. It's going to matter regardless of where bivocationally you're called to work life. So another comment and kind of question we had was this feeling, this tension of when you're doing bivocational ministry, you're not doing anything well. You're not doing anything 100%. There's a tension of, I can't give everything I want to the ministry. I can't give everything I want to my job, depending on the kind of job that you're in. How do you navigate that tension? Michael, let's start with you again, and Joel, we'll hear from you as well. What's that tension like?
First of all, you're not going to do either job well. Let's just lay that out there. I mean, there's some cold, hard facts. Sometimes it's the reality. You'll do both of them the best of your ability, but there is a reality. You know, if you focus on your attention's split, then you have a hard time, right? I mean, that's just the reality. So I think how you balance that is, first of all, give yourself grace. Number one, give yourself grace. Number two, I would say, allow yourself to understand, and I think Justin did a great job, Justin Barney in our webinar, explaining how to balance and delegate. Delegate what you need to do. And I think that's so important. And the third thing is just really understand that at moments and times in life, that this, it may not go the way you want it to go. And that's okay. Meaning this, so you're at your job and you're subbing and someone calls and their family member passed away. You may need to go to your boss in the middle and say, this is not my family member, but I really need to get out of my job today. Is there a way around that? That has happened. Or I will flip it the other way. The school calls, we're in desperate need, Michael. We absent you today. Is there any way you can help us out? And so for my job, I had more of a flexibility that way. But the reality was allowing yourself on both ends to say, okay, that's okay. That today I'm going to do this, or this moment in time, I'm going to do this. And both ways are good witnesses. Just because you're not doing, quote, church stuff doesn't mean you're not doing ministry. And so just really, I think going back to the first one is grace. Give yourself a ton of grace. Because if you don't do that, you'll beat yourself up every night. And I think just allowing yourself to understand that is really important. You aren't going to do both of them. It's true. But do the best of your ability and trust Jesus in it, because I think Jesus knows more than we do about growing his church.
Preach, Hool. You're such a good pastor. Jeez, that's just like speaking to people's souls right there. Joel, do you have any thoughts on that, just that tension of doing things well? Anything to add there?
Yeah, listen to Michael. It occurs to me that is a discussion that needs to happen during the assessment and conversational parts of when we're talking with church planters. I've talked to several church planters that had ideas of what jobs they were going to do when they moved to those towns. And you can, not always, but we can head some of this off at the pass just in helping our planters and our bivo folks pick the right kind of jobs. You know, if the job is, you know, Fortune 500 and it's trying to grow some big thing, or it's a very entrepreneurial small business that's booming and you're expected to climb the ladder and grow it and grow it and grow it and put in hours and hours and hours and hours, then that's only going to magnify the idea. It's not doing well. Or one of those things is going to suffer. You know, I know several church plants where just the planters are engaged in their job too much. And, you know, they need something where they can do 40 hours and work hard and get paid decent, but have time outside of that. But so I think just in the beginning, we would do planters a good, and anybody that's going to be bivo, we'd probably do them a good service just by talking through that a little bit of like, hey, when you're looking for a certain kind of job, this is what you want to, you know, what Justin said earlier, just, you know, I could have been in Keene, but you know, he was going to be working crazy hours. and taken away from the plant and his family.
Yeah, that's great. So let's go over to you, Justin. I want to flip to our last kind of question here that we're thinking about, and that is all about resources. There is only so much time in the life of a planter, and you're expected to write sermons and write curriculum and, you know, get great media and graphics and a social media presence. And, right, like, the list is endless. You could continually be doing stuff all the time. How do we think about kind of balancing that, juggling that, and then also getting all those resources as a planter who's just starting off when you're really trying to just gather people? Like, that is some of the key stuff that you're really focused on.
Yeah. I would say the first thing that comes to my mind right away is not to underestimate the value of prayer. Praying for what you need. I think sometimes we just forget that. You know, it's just like, well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Wow. But honestly, let me give you a quick snapshot of something that happened to us. I had a little bit of a graphic design background at the church that I was part of, so we were multiple hats. But when you move out and you're doing bivocational planting again, your time is so limited. I used to say that, you know, my 100% is really 75%, like, if that, you know, some weeks less than that. It is what it is. Like, I agree with Michael, like, totally. Like, you just won't do both as 100%. You won't do them both well. So I think you have to figure out what can suffer a little bit sometimes. Part of how this happened for us is, you know, we were praying. I said early on, like, you know, I think marketing is a really big deal, you know, especially when you're going out. And I mean, certainly, you know, word of mouth kind of thing really happened for us. Having a web presence, having a social media presence, having really good design, especially for the people that we are trying to, like, zero in on, which actually here in small town USA is anybody that walks, breathes, or eats, you know, or looks back at you. I mean, so in that way, we are, you know, we're shooting at a big target. But I would say prayer, not underestimating the power of that. I was praying long and hard about somebody that would be able to come into our midst and kind of pick up some of the pieces of what I was doing. But honestly, I was spending a lot of time, but I knew how important it was. And within a couple weeks of me saying that, I said that to my wife, and we started praying about it. And within a couple weeks of that, we had a, like, complete graphic design artist, videographer, works for a really big name in our area, walked through our door on a Sunday morning and has never left, and now does all of our content, media, designs, graphic. I mean, he does everything. So again, just going back, I could tell a ton of stories about just praying into the specific needs that you have and see what God will do. I just totally believe that he will shock you or surprise you, and just to be faithful with that, remembering to pray. The second thing I would say is you need to leverage what you have at your disposal. I try to stay in contact with local area pastors, friends of ours in the vineyard. We're one of four vineyards in the state. So again, smaller vineyard area, you know, but and we're kind of spread out. So it's not always feasible. But hey, if I can get a worship leader from our closest vineyard church to come in and, like, maybe lead worship for, like, you know, once, you know, every 6 months or something like that. Honestly, that has sustained me personally in such a huge way. So personally, I benefit from a situation like that. The flip side of that is our congregation benefits from just mixing it up a little bit, keeping things fresh, like hearing another voice. Sometimes, you know, you can get boring, you know, like, you can just, if you're the one that's always speaking and maybe doing music, if you have musical abilities, people like to hear different voices and interacting. So as long as you trust that person, they're kind of on board with who you are and what you're doing. I would say, give them opportunities, invite speakers to come in. We were talking earlier and Joel said, you know, take them out to lunch. As a church plant, we made it very clear up front, like, hey man, we can't, or, you know, woman, we can't pay you. You know, like this, you know, kind of like a stipend for coming and speaking, but man, we'll take you out to lunch, and just, you get the benefit of knowing that you just helped out a church plant, a plant that is really trying to see God move forward in our community. We're starting out. We're just a fledgling plant. And just to know that you poured water on us today. You absolutely planted some new fertilizer in the soil of our church. And so we're so thankful for that.
That's good. That's good, good stuff. Joel, how does a planter, kind of diving right off of that, manage to fit in prep for a sermon, you know, while they're doing full-time jobs, sometimes being married or maybe having kids? How do you actually survive preparing sermons weekly?
Yeah, I think, you know, one is just be realistic on your time schedule and what is the priority. The priority is gathering people. If our viewers have a chance to pick up, like, you know, Ed Stetzer and Daniel M's book on planting missional churches, has a great little section on how planters ought to spend their hours, particularly if they're part-time or bivocational. But I think most of us will come from churches where we have very polished speakers and we feel the burden to do that. All of our people are listening to podcasts with very polished, professional, incredible people that can, you know, fill stadiums and hold everybody's attention. And there's just a pressure. I've got to do this. And I've just resisted that. I'm a big fan early on. I tell church planters that I have influence with, use other people's stuff. You know, make sure to cite them. You know, make sure to say, hey, I was, you know. You don't want your church to think like, all of Francis Chan's stuff is actually yours. Man, that crazy love series you did was awesome. I picked up a book by Francis Chan. He must've listened to your stuff online. You want to cite it, but I mean, I don't know why we feel the pressure. We don't feel the pressure to do new worship songs every week and to write them. I have no idea why we feel the pressure to write new sermons, particularly if the goal is to gather and disciple people. And in those early stages, that just has to be the engine, and develop leaders. That's what your priority needs to be doing. Talk to your sending pastor. Hey, can I have, I'll tell you what I'm doing right now for a local church plant that it's two volunteer, one's a full-time mom, and then another guy is, they're kind of co-pastoring this, and the other guy's a full-time school teacher. I just ask him, what topics do you want? What books of the Bible do you want? And I have a Google Drive account, and I just upload all the PowerPoints, all the everything, note sheets, Word docs, everything they need is on there. And they're not just doing my stuff word for word. They're tailoring it to themselves, but it's a huge help. So, yeah, I mean, if the internet, man, open.life.church, you can get all of Life Church TV stuff for free, graphics, you name it. I mean, even if you don't want to preach their sermons, you can get the graphics and use them, and they've just open sourced it. Take it, use it, do whatever you need to. So I would just encourage folks, do that. Don't be the guy or gal that says, I got to spend 15 or 20 hours a week on sermon prep. That's dumb. Don't do that.
So, Michael, as you're thinking about that, I know you have benefited from being a part of a triad. And you love talking about triads. Tell us, how has that kind of been a model to allow your church to do more of this?
Well, first of all, I want to go off of Joel. You need to steal everything. Give credit where credit all over, but steal everything. I used to coach. I used to teach. Every coach, college coach you watch, NBA, pro, they steal from somebody else. They modify it to fit their needs, but they steal. I don't know why in ministry we've lost that idea, but it should happen for everything from your small groups to your sermons, to everything. With that said, what saved us is a triad model. It's a group of three churches coming together, supporting one another through time, talent, and their treasure. Also with the goal of planting other churches. But what we've come out of it, what we've created, is called affinity groups. So what has happened is we take our worship leaders, they get together either through like Zoom meetings like this, or they go have, if they can drive and meet at one of the churches or go have coffee, they'll do that. By phone, they meet. And they meet on a regular basis. They say, man, we have this big event coming up, and we really don't have a drummer. Do you have a drummer? That would really help us out. And then as Justin said, we can't really pay anything, but because you're in a reciprocal relationship, it's no longer about money. It's all about supporting one another. And so we'll go up to an event in Stanley and help them. They'll come to an event in our church and help us. And Tomahawk will do the same. Those are the three churches in our triad out of Wisconsin. And what we've discovered is the children's resources. The ideas that are flowing back and forth now, and the exchange of just ideas alone are worth the price of admission. but just to support. So our kids' churches, children's leaders pray for each other. They talk to each other. They talk about issues they got going on. We took part of the security policy we had, and we modified it to fit something that Stanley was using that we liked with ours. I mean, so it's just been this combination of sharing these things. And I'll tell you, the triad model has been just huge for us. As pastors, we meet an hour and a half once a month, and we never miss. And that hour and a half is related to church planning and related to basically needs of our ministry, personal and church at large. And those are huge things. And I feel that if you're not doing that, you're working too hard and you're trying to reinvent a wheel that's already been invented. I got news for you. Everything that needs to be preached has already been preached at least 50 million times. I am not kidding you. Jesus has been around forever. He came to earth, came back. It's been over 2,000 years. I don't know why we think we have to be that creative. Really, seriously, Francis Chan's Crazy Love to Rick Warren's Person Driven Life, it's been done. John Wesley did it. They've all done it. It's just, we need to be honest with ourselves. But then to take credit, I do agree, you got to give credit where credit's due, but steal it. You know, our small group resources, I haven't written one small group curriculum since we've started small groups. There's just too much out there. Why would you? You know, why? I mean, if you want to do something on financial and budgets, you have Crown, you have Ramsey, you have everything to take from. So don't reinvent the wheel. I mean, I feel like I'm preaching this, but I tried to reinvent the wheel. I tried to take 12 hours of sermon prep a week when I first started, and I thought I was going to die. I don't do that anymore. And boy, it makes my life a lot better.
Well, thank you guys for delving in, for being honest, for addressing some of the nitty gritty questions, little details we didn't get to in the first webinar. This has really, really been helpful, I hope. And for folks who are listening in, if you have other questions, put them below wherever this video lives. Maybe it's on our blog, maybe it's on your Facebook, maybe it's on YouTube. It's probably going to live in all three of those places. And so if you have more questions, let us know. We are really wanting to connect and resource, especially folks in the Vineyard who are doing this, who are pastoring, and who are doing bivocational ministry. We love what you're doing. We bless what you're doing. Thanks, Michael Houle, for being honest and always giving it to us straight. Thanks, Jill Seymour. We love all your years of experience. And Justin Barney, thanks so much for being the best-looking Justin on this call. We love having you with us. All right, you guys, have a great night, and we'll see you later.